You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies.
This is AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show.
It's AfterBuzz TV's House of Cards After Show.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, After Buzzers, and welcome to the second season of Netflix original series House of Cards. I'm your host, Thaddeus Massey. This is Chapter 22, and joining me today is...
Hey, everyone, I'm Sophia Stanley.
Hey, guys, it's Emma Kay.
Yes, this was a very enticing episode. We have a little bit of a sexual romper room going on here with Claire and the airing of The Dirty Laundry coming out with her and Adam Galloway. Thoughts? I want a one word summation of that particular situation. Sophia, go.
Intelligent.
Emma.
Clumsy.
How about you, Thaddeus?
I would say messy. And the reason I'm going to say messy with this particular situation is simply because now you're dealing with emotions and it's not straight business. Now business and personal are getting like all intermingled and intertwined. And you see a couple of moments there where Claire might feel a little jealous of Adam's moving on and having somebody new, and then her being upset that Frank's not more jealous of the fact that she was actually with Adam. It's just like a whole weird pot of mixing of emotions with this situation here. And of course, you got to get Seth and Stamper involved because they are damage control experts. So I think it was really funny and telling of Frank's non-understanding, just like you, like we've talked about Frank and how Frank has kind of underestimated or not read situations properly, like he did with Lanigan or like he did with Chief Whitehall. I think he kind of did the same thing with his own wife in this particular situation. And the reason I say that is because when his wife said, I wish you would have been a little bit more jealous, he said, he immediately referred to Tusk, saying, no, you're being attacked because of Tusk trying to get to me, which that's not what she was talking about. She was talking about the situation with Adam in particular. She wishes he was a little more jealous because she had been with another man as his wife. He got upset with the whole McGinnis thing, and he was throwing lamps around in the bathroom and everything, but I believe the difference in that situation was because she had been sexually assaulted. It wasn't of her own free will. It wasn't a consensual scenario. With Adam, it was something that she wanted. It was something that pleasured her. And I believe Frank, he went along with it because that's what, you know, suits her fancy right now. Let her go ahead and let her pleasure herself, blah, blah, blah. He immediately referred to Tusk and didn't automatically think that I wish you would have been jealous because you're my husband. I wish you would have been more jealous. That is exactly how I read that, and I'm almost sure that's what it was.
I think your analysis is spot on. However, I would literally use the exact same examples to argue the exact opposite point.
Okay.
I think that specifically with Frank, when she said, I wish you were more jealous, I feel like Frank was actually using the same type of verbiage that she used when she did communicate the sexual assault, i.e., we don't have time to let emotions get into this. And I'm actually not, I was never fearful that I was going to lose you to Adam. So it was just a fling. So that actually isn't what hurts. What hurts is that you have now been attacked. Your character has been attacked publicly. And the person who's responsible for that is Tusk. So in his mind, it's the larger of the two evils. He's aware of the fact that he's always been aware that his wife was sleeping with someone else. So in his mind, this is nothing new. The only thing new about it is the fact that it's been made public. So for him, that's the wrong that needs to be righted. And ironically, I think that the same, again, the same analysis that you use, the reason that I say intelligent is because it is such a messy situation.
Right.
It is such an emotional situation. But the way that Claire went about solving it was purely strategic.
No, like, she did a great job in how she handled it. She was straight gangster.
Completely. Yeah. So even though there were, exactly, there were moments where when he mentioned, you know, that he's living with this person, she goes, oh, that's quickly, or you move quickly.
Right.
And, you know, and then when she heard, oh, it's his fiance, you saw her react.
Yeah.
However, it didn't deter her from the game plan. And initially when she kind of seemed like she was stabbing Adam in the back, I was like, this B word. But then I realized, oh my God, like, she's so intelligent. Because then when she explained it, obviously, to everyone else, i.e. Adam, but really to us, or more importantly, to Sophia, I was like, she's completely right. Because he wouldn't have gone along with it, and it couldn't have been too clean. It made so much more logical sense the way that she played it out. So I felt like it was so intelligent. And then lastly, I feel like the reason that Frank actually does not see her like Lanigan or anyone else is because he doesn't underestimate her, because he respects her. And that's why he let her handle the situation. He tried to kind of buck up on her for a split second and was like, oh, let's think about this. And when she said, I have it handled, he basically said, it's her wound to suture. Even though we've both been affected, it's really her that's being harmed by that. So again, recognizing that she's been harmed and that there's a harm that's been done, but she's the only person who can do it. And he allowed her to do that. Why? Not because she's his wife. It's because he respects her.
Well, go ahead, Emma.
And the difference between McGinnis and Galloway is that McGinnis, Frank wasn't in her life during that period. So in a way, he feels like he didn't have control of the situation, and it pisses him off. But with Adam, he was completely in control of the situation because he was doing things at the same time that benefited both of them. So he knew if he's going to go out and do what he needs to do, then she needs to have an outlet for her to express her emotions somehow. But with McGinnis, it's like publicly knowing that you're going to give a medal to this person who assaulted your wife, and you can't do anything about it because you weren't there, and now it's hurting her.
Right. Well, one thing about the McGinnis situation is that, he wasn't in her life at that time. She was, like, what, a freshman in college or something like that she referred to before. And with the Adam situation, when Adam first was introduced to us, we knew off top that there had been a past history, and that was actually before the show as well. And they didn't really give us too many details about how that began. They kind of did. I think they were on some excursion off in another country for some.
I would presume
for
that,
some nonprofit.
I presume that in the press conference, everything she was saying was true up until a point. So
right.
I feel like she actually really did meet him when she hired him to do the marketing campaign for the CWI,
right.
Not the auction, but the initial pictures
yes.
on the wall.
Yes,
I feel like that's actually when they met and they got together.
Okay, so we don't know what Frank was doing during that time in order to instigate that or to motivate her to. You know, and we obviously see, if you've seen other episodes, you know that the lines of their relationship were somewhat blurred when it comes to physicality, I guess.
Like a little kid. I was like starting to giggle. Like,
So I still believe that when a wife uses the word jealous, she was not referring to Tusk or anything business wise.
No,
so
we agree.
She's definitely referring to relationship wise. And, you know, but of course, Frank is not going to drop the ball on this. Yeah, sweetheart. This is about Tusk, and we got to blah, 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 because Tusk is on this. These guys are at each other's throats.
Do you think she's comparing herself to her case to the Zoe case in any way? The fact that he did much worse, yet it was so, to her, it was much cleaner than what she did. She was lousy at what she did, and it came out that Tusk was able to use it against her. So I don't know if she was asking from the point of view, like, I don't know why you're not mad at me because you're jealous, or why you're not mad at me because I wasn't more careful.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, but she used the word jealous. That's the thing that...
Did she say jealous or angry?
No, she said jealous.
She did say jealous?
If I'm wrong, you guys, I'm almost positive, 99.9% sure she said jealous.
Okay.
But if she said angry, you guys can correct me.
And even if, and maybe this isn't what you're saying, Emma, so correct me if I'm wrong, but she did say, maybe I think it was a quote before, she goes, I'm sorry, I know this is demeaning. Meaning that something that she did now has basically put, you know, their plan in jeopardy. Kind of like you were saying, even though, you know, he obviously had dalliances with Zoe, they were able to, as far as we know.
Okay, here I actually did write it down. She did not say jealous.
Okay.
I'm going to go back and watch it again. But she said, part of me wishes you'd be more upset.
Yes. Yeah,
that's what she said.
That's why.
Part of me wishes you'd be more upset. So because I'm correcting myself. Thank you there. Anyway, go ahead.
She wasn't careful. She got up and left out of nowhere one night and was spending, a week, 2 weeks with Adam and then had to come back when Russo died. She had to come back and be next to Frank for the press conference.
Okay, but don't those kind of dalliances seem like they would, pop up out of nowhere if you're in a pursuit to power? Those are the kind of things that are loose ends.
I completely agree.
That is just kind of like...
But I completely agree, but that's, I think, exactly why Seth was like, after the second picture came up, he was like, wait a minute, I thought I asked you, and you said it ended two years ago, and you have short hair.
Exactly.
It's like, you can't keep holding information back, but
and then lying
not-
to your own... I mean, you know what's funny about Seth? Seth is like the dude that's like, you don't lie to Seth.
No.
Seth is the dude that has your back.
Yeah.
That's going to, the attorney is like, look, I'm the person that you tell everything to. Of course, Sophia knows about this. And, and you don't want to lie to me because, you know, you're protected by, you know, confidentiality and whatever, blah, blah, blah. Don't not tell me because I can't help cover your tracks properly if you don't tell me the truth and only tell me part of the scenario.
But I feel as if there was a moment or there were moments in this episode when we saw Claire be quote-unquote normal, where she wasn't necessarily on her game. So even when Seth asked her, she was like, well, it's not me. Well, it could be me. Well, I didn't know he took the picture. Like, it wasn't her normal, authoritative, decisive self when she was talking. And I think she really kind of was like, oh, crap. Because I don't think she
really knew, though.
I don't think she knew. But then also, too, even the words coming out of her mouth for Claire should have kind of slapped herself. She was like, yeah, I went there. There was a party with his friends. So you think that people aren't going to remember that less than 6 months ago, I was at a party with the now wife of the vice president of the United States of America drinking. She was, and remember,
And what are you doing naked at the party? Taking a shower?
Well, I mean, that's all another. Assuming that was not actually at the actual party, but it's during that same trip.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But still, the fact that she was saying it so matter of fact, and she's like, oh, well, it's not a big deal because we said we were friends. So why are you at a party without your husband and you're a married woman? And maybe I'm old school, but that doesn't fly with me that you would be in another city at a party not with your husband. And again, she was like, you know what I mean, she was extremely loose at the party. I think she even smoked weed, right? Didn't she even smoke weed at the party?
I think she took a couple hits
with that with that girl.
I think,
and she doesn't somehow think that could come back to bite her.
Right.
I feel like Claire was having a normal moment, a non-diabolical, pragmatic strategist moment. She was actually being a real human being, and she just kind of was like, oh, crap, I totally forgot about that, and I don't know what to do.
Well, I think that when Adam mentioned his new girlfriend from Bogota...
Fiancé.
Yeah, excuse me, fiancé, that she actually... You saw her excuse herself from the room with Seth. She went to walk. She went into the living room. I mean, to the hallway, and spoke more personally. You could tell that at that point when he told her that, she excused herself because it hit home for her at that point. And he said, "I don't want this screwed up. I want to marry this girl." You know, so it was serious. And for her, I think she felt somewhat replaced to a certain degree. Even though it's like this guy wanted to be with you and you weren't available. So what do you expect him to do? Like sit around just taking pictures and wishing that Claire was there for the rest of his life? I mean, I think it was like a reality check for her, basically. And part of me feels like she was a little bitter about it, just a little bit. Because that outlet is not available to her anymore. As not really mad at Adam, more of the options. You know, people in the elite, they like having options. That's part of being elite. You have these options, and she's comfortable with Adam, having Adam as that outlet for her, and now he's off of the table for her.
Excellent point.
What do you guys think? I want to know what you guys think, and I want to know what you guys think. Do you guys feel bad for Adam? How do you guys feel about Adam and the situation, how he got dealt with? how he was invalidated or discredited, I should say better. He was discredited. His credibility was shot to hell. And now he's in this position where he has to lie. He's caught between Remy and the Tusk side and the Underwood side in this feud. And he's being made to suffer. His girlfriend's dad is being threatened. His life is on the line. Like, there's really a lot of things on the table. Do you feel bad for Adam? And that goes for you guys too, but what do you guys think?
I felt bad the first time when the photos were leaked because he had nothing to do with it. His assistant leaked the photos. But the second time when he volunteered to work with Remy, and I'm going to say volunteered because as Underwood, Frank said, he could have gone to them and said, hey, a guy by the name of Remy has come to me and he's threatening my fiance's dad. Can you guys help me since we're all working together, even though, you know, Claire changed her story? But as Sophia said, it made sense. If it was so clean and they all agreed on the same topic, it would have been, the media would have been all over it. Like, okay, this doesn't make sense. Both of you guys have the same story. What's going on here? But he chose to work with Remy, and that's why I don't feel bad for him. He doesn't know this person. He says this person used to work for Frank Underwood. And
but this was after he was discredited, right? Wasn't this after when Remy approached him?
But the first discredit wasn't really a discredit.
Wasn't the same story.
It wasn't the same story.
Right. And it makes perfect sense. Like, at the end of the day, because what it's really saying is you're not a celebrity, you're not a politician, you're not a public figure.
Right.
So these types of things kind of scare you. And you're like, oh my God, I didn't take the picture. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be your first reaction because you don't want to be involved in all of that. It made perfect sense. And think about it. Claire went above and beyond to basically be like, we love Adam's work. You know, he's extremely talented. He's so talented that we had him come into our home and take this personal picture for us.
Right.
That was basically, in essence, once this whole everything died down, that was our stamp of approval that his star rating would have shot through the roof. Like, after this would have died down, he would have confirmed their story. He would have been the sought-after photographer from now until forever. It would have been perfect. But he got his feelings involved in it. That's really what happened. And when Remy came and he was making the phone call, I completely 100% agree with Emma. Why didn't he call Frank? Frank's the vice president of the United States of America. This person is who?
And
because he showed you a phone number from Bogota? You're just going to be like, oh my God.
Well,
you're not
he showed
think-
the number, but the inference was further on.
I agree. But again, yeah, you're not going to call the vice president of the United States of America who literally like has no reason not to help you.
Right. And he says, Remy said, you couldn't do anything. It's like, really? For, you know, all the time you've been with Claire, I would assume that you know how Frank operates. I'm sure she shared, you know, her concerns, her stories with him. So he definitely knows what Frank is capable of. So as far as I'm concerned, he brought that on his fiance's dad by having him,
not to cut you off, but I do want to say this. Remember when he met with Claire later and he said, I knew you were capable of some things.
Sorry.
Remember this? Uh-huh. And I'm not speaking verbatim for what he said, but he said, I knew you were capable of some things. But he didn't grasp.
No.
And I don't think he grasped. At that, he didn't realize it until later.
Mm-hmm.
How deep and how serious and how powerful and the level of people that he was dealing with and operating with were on. He didn't really hit home for him until later. Even at that point before, he still didn't grasp, you know. Like you're saying, yeah, he's the vice president, call him, blah, blah, blah. But someone's like, yeah, we're going to kill your girlfriend's dad. He's on the trial, blah, blah, blah. He's like dealing with that right there in his face. You know, who is this black guy in a suit that comes out of nowhere, all this bravado, showing's like, look, is the phone still ringing? He said, I'm going to call. Who did he get on the phone with that he was going to call and it was just ringing?
I'm assuming that it must have been Frank.
I think it was, wasn't
it? It has to be Frank. Who else would he call? It's either Frank or the police. That's the only two people it could be.
Was it the police?
No, that's what I'm saying. Those are the only two logical options, and it's not the police. Because that actually isn't a logical option.
You guys can correct us on this. I can't remember who was Adam Galloway calling when Remy was in his face, and he says, you recognize that area code, that country code, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, he said, the phone's still ringing, isn't it? And he got off the phone.
This is my problem with
Remy
Adam.
Walks with... His thing is dragging down the street. This guy.
Oh, my goodness.
He's swagging. Yeah. No, I'm serious. Remy holds a lot of juice. He holds a lot of juice, this guy. Think about it. I'm just saying how his bravado and how, you know, he's.
Well, he only has that because he's working for Tusk, and he knows
but he has
how-
it. The bottom line is he has it. It's not about why he has it. That's like saying Frank has power because he's the vice president. Everybody has the power they have based on their position. And Remy has a position. Just like he told Jackie, I don't want to step ahead in another episode.
Because I feel like with Tusk or with any person he lobbies for, so-called lobbies for, he has limitation. With Tusk, he has no limits of what he could do, how much he could torture or hurt people. But with other people, I'm sure because they're scared, they're going to give him limits. Okay, go as far as, you know, just hurting the wife or, you know, just their reputation. So he has some boundaries to work with. With Tusk, there is no boundaries.
Right.
So that's why he's able to have something hanging very
and,
long.
And I'm not disagreeing with you on his level of bravado.
Right.
However, Adam is a feeble opponent. And the reason so it's not even, it's like anyone would seem big and bad in front of Adam. And the reason being is, again,
it's like one meeting.
And not only that, they are very deliberate. Just the entire shot, right? When they come into that art gallery, it's like, it was beautiful and aesthetic and so clean and pristine and modern, right? And even the woman's voice, and I don't know, maybe it was just me, it seemed so like put on and so like hoity, right? So basically, to me, what they were showing is Adam comes from this, and not necessarily privileged from the sake that he was born with a silver spoon, but privileged in the same point that he's an artist who just travels the world and, you know, Claire broke his heart and he ran off to Colombia for a couple of months and then met this beautiful girl and brings her back to live with him. He just lives this really flighty,
naive existence. Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you know what I mean? This woman's like, oh, I didn't want to say over the phone. You never know. You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, it was like, bam, reality. Wake up.
Right.
Country code. What are you going to do?
Right.
I think that's what they were trying to show. And even in so much as, when you lie with dogs, you get fleas. Maybe you thought you were lying with a retriever and not a pit bull. But at the end of the day, the audacity when he came in the house, like, I feel him. Like, when they, you know, when they sent the Secret Service to get him and he's walking in the house and he sees the picture. Don't get me wrong. I'd have been pissed. But he walks in the room. He sees Claire. Again, you're at her home.
But
so
now Frank is in the room.
No,
this
but
is the first
this,
time.
But before this, he doesn't even know at first. Because you can tell by the way that he opens the door, right?
Right.
He opens the door
because Frank was standing on the
side. Still, you're still in her house. And not her house, her husband's house.
Right.
And the way that when he saw Frank, he was like, oh, crap. It's like, yeah, so all this time, you didn't know that you were sleeping with a married woman? So I agree with what everyone's saying, and especially Thaddeus. I agree that he didn't know the depths to which these people were capable and that they are truly diabolical and live in their own underworld.
Right.
But at the same time, you were still carrying on an affair with a married woman. And no matter how egregious that ends up, usually a husband or a wife, like we've seen with Jillian, comes and says, why are you screwing my wife?
Right.
Frank doesn't say that, but he says something equally way better.
And
way
I have to, better. He does. I have to completely, you know, just agree and just expound on that. It just really briefly, dude, you're sleeping with a married woman. You think that's not going to come back to bite you in the butt some kind of way? I don't care what level that you're dealing with them. You guys could have been lower class, lower upper middle class, you know, the elite or whatever. There's ramifications to that. And he had to deal with it. And I didn't really feel bad for him. I kind of felt bad, you know, and you're like, oh, they made nigga, he didn't know that they were going to do this. And now they have him looking like he's crazy, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, you would have never had this problem if you weren't sleeping with a married woman. Like, you knew she was married when you started this thing. It wasn't like you started an affair with somebody or started seeing somebody or began a relationship and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, she springs on you. I'm married. He knew from jump she was married. So at that point, you're kind of like, oh, well, dude, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You got kind of caught up in, you know,
but
your own mess.
I think he was completely out of line the way he approached Claire. And at that point, I think Frank showed how protective or even you could say how jealous he was, which showed in his overprotectiveness of her and how he stepped in. So for her to ask that question, it was unnecessary.
For her to ask?
You know, if she...
What did she ask?
Well, you said, you know, which we assume she thought, she said, why weren't you jealous?
More jealous
of the situation.
Upset, yeah.
But how he handled Adam showed how much he cared for her and what he would do for her.
He said, What exactly did he say?
Yeah,
go ahead.
He goes, because basically, he steps to Claire and he goes, your wife, he goes, oh, it's a fucking joke, Claire. Do not talk to my, and then Frank goes, do not talk to my wife that way. And then Adam goes, your wife, what does it even mean to you? And I love, notice how Frank always, when it's really important, Frank stands up and comes closer to the person, in essence making sure, like, I'm just
imposing
making sure,
power.
Exactly, right, that you hear me.
Right.
He goes, do not mistake any history you have shared for the slightest understanding of what our marriage is or how insignificant you are in comparison.
Right.
And you saw, and I love how Claire smiles, because she doesn't.
She smiles right. with her eyes.
She smiles with her eyes, mm-hmm. and you saw it, and she was like, oh, yes. And then basically she was like, oh, I need a moment. And he goes, and Frank goes, okay. I'm going to go talk to Durant.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, right. she literally, that's all she needed. Because if anything, that was so much better than any other type of act of jealousy. Mm-hmm. It was literally like, oh, wait, dude, do you think I didn't know about you? Do you think that in any way I was in any way jealous, envious, scared that you had any part of my wife's attention
right.
that in any way concerned me as her husband? So I'm letting you know, just in case you didn't realize what husband and wife meant. Husband and wife means that you, her, who, whatever you are, can't step to my wife in my house mm-hmm. and disrespect her.
Okay.
No.
Okay, well, here's what I have to say to that. And the reason I have something to say to that is because she was sleeping with him. So the sanctity of that whole institution is thrown out the door as far as Adam's concerned. If he wants to come in there and talk the crap that he wants to talk, then...
But not in front of the husband.
It doesn't matter.
Okay,
it doesn't matter because Claire allowed that. So that's something that they have to deal with within their marriage.
In their house?
They're the one that had him come over there.
Okay.
He didn't say, I want to come over. Can I come over and say... They had him. They went and procured him from... Okay. Extracted him from his location and brought him over to help them quell a situation that they were trying to calm down. So now that they're all in his face, like, they need something. Because ultimately, they need something. They need him to cooperate with them.
So
it doesn't matter that Frank is there. I wouldn't have any respect for Frank. I wouldn't have any respect... Well... I don't want to say, especially Claire. I mean, the way he stood up, he showed the liberty or the comfort that he has with Claire when he stood up and started talking to her the way he did.
But he's
Frank had to say something. Now, for Frank, I'll let you say something in a minute, Emma. But Frank, if you remember in season one, when she was over there, he actually sent Meacham to go find out where she was at, to verify where he knew that she was, because he knew where she was at. That showed that he cares, and that showed as a man, as a husband, that it did bother him. He just didn't want confirmation of where she was for safety purposes, yeah. or, you know, I want to know where my wife is, so I just want to make sure she's safe. No, he was upset.
Okay.
He was upset that his wife was sleeping with Adam. But Frank handles things differently than the average guy. So you can't say how he handles things, or just because he doesn't get PO'd like the average guy is going to go over there and punch a guy and knock a guy out. This is something he had to deal with his wife, because it wasn't like the McGinnis situation. She was consensually, she took her butt over there and was continuing this whatever it was because of a breach in their relationship that they had. So... I don't know.
Point.
Like, I don't, you know, like I said, I'll go back to Adam. Don't feel bad for Adam. Frank handled it the way he handled it. And Claire deserved to get disrespected by Adam. Hmm. And that's how I look at it, because she allowed it.
I have a silly question in that conversation. Did anyone think that for a moment when Frank was asking him, like, what did he tell his fiance? Did he leave his phone at home? Did you guys think that they were going to kill him?
No.
Oh, then I'm a dork. I really thought so.
No,
I
because
why she's me all those new. Questions?
She's new. She doesn't know anything, and they want to know how much, you know, that they could trust her. He just met her, right?
No, and I get that.
No,
I
didn't get that. What I got from him leaving his cell phone at home was...
GPS of tracking.
Yeah. That was just...
No, all that. But didn't you think that there was a moment... I don't know. Maybe I think they're way more diabolical than they really are. When they were asking those questions, I was like, don't say that. Be like, no. Like, she totally knows where I am. I don't know.
Right.
I'm a dork. I thought for that split second before the scene progressed, I was like, oh, crap. Adam's done.
Right. Well, I didn't think they couldn't. It was already out in the news.
Still,
so then what? They're going to do Adam, or Adam's missing now? That would have been too obvious.
I completely agree with you, but I'm telling you, it doesn't make logical sense. But in that moment, I thought Adam was dead.
That's why everybody who's like in a position of jeopardy or their lives are being threatened, if you ever noticed, they always like, I got to get famous real quick. Because if anything happens to me, this is obviously going to be tied to whoever that they're fearful of or they're jealous of or whatever.
Interesting.
So the fact that he was already in the public eye, they couldn't do anything to him at that point. They had to, like, control the situation at that point.
Okay.
Let's discuss... let's talk about Freddie in this scenario with him, because it's funny how they developed this backstory for him and his franchise offer. You know, he gets his franchise offer and they want to take Freddie's barbecue joint, like, to the suburbs. And they're even going to build the new places to make them look old. And with the peeling lamination on the floors and everything to give it that authentic feel. It's funny how Freddie goes through these conflicts, these inner conflicts of selling out and making wise business choices. Like, he says, oh, so they want to feel like they're hanging out with the blah, blah, blah of the neighborhood. Yes, I won't say it, Sophia.
I think I almost had a heart attack.
She's like... She's about to say the word and say, you better not. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, so you can see what he's going through. Now, my question for you guys in his scenario, we see him go through this. He gets his business proposition. He gets offered a sizable amount of money from where he's coming from. And he tries to make amends with his son, tries to repair his family situation and build from there. How do you feel about that? How do you guys feel about Freddie's situation? Because I have two schools of thought when it comes to that. I'm probably going to speak out of both sides of my mouth on this particular situation with Freddie and the barbecue joint. Do you have any thoughts on it, Emma?
It was nice to get a kind of like a backstory on Freddie, but at the same time, I just feel like he is using Frank as a way to move forward because of the fact that, you know, he's gotten a lot more self-confidence from when we first saw him, when we were first introduced to him. You know, he served the president in Frank's house. You know, Frank, the vice president, is going to his restaurant to eat. But I just feel like making that deal was not so wise. I don't know why.
Okay.
To move.
Okay, it's funny. I thought you were going to go in a different direction.
Yeah,
and I'm
so
going to piggyback off of your direction for a second. But just real quick, I actually loved the entire story and how it started and stopped with Freddie.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the morning when he woke up. Did either of you guys notice that music and the framing was very Spike Lee-esque,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to look it up. It was Jodie Foster who directed the episode.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
go
right?
Jodie.
And I don't know, Woo! And I haven't done enough research. So if you guys know in the Twitterverse, iTunes, you know, YouTube, if she studied under him when she did Inside Man. Because to me, it was
very Spike
Lee. It was Spike Lee. Do you know what I mean? The music, the way that he, you know, was getting ready and he, you know, was in the inversion. And did you notice how he kind of meditated
mm-hmm.
when he inverted and he meditated?
Yes.
You kind of saw a side to him, I think, that you would have never thought of.
Right.
Walking to work, and this is where I disagree with you about the confidence, he's a public figure within his neighborhood. The
yes.
way he was walking down the street and people are saying hi to him and, you know, he had a sense of purpose, like even in the way that he walked and his facial expressions and
yes.
he has a business. Like, I don't care where your business is, to be a business owner, you have a certain level of pride, of ownership, and the fact that no one's making you get up. You have to be the one to get up every morning and kind of make a way, make a living for yourself.
Right.
Where I thought you were going to go with it was... There was a part of me that was upset about, obviously, how Tusk was using Freddie in this whole scenario
yeah.
and how everything, you know, turned out. And so the end result, I was still upset about it. However, I do agree that the entire opportunity for a franchise came because of Frank. Because
mm-hmm.
if not for Frank, if not for the article of mentioning Frank, he would have never gotten any traction.
Right.
So that aspect of it, I kind of was conflicted. What was your question again? Sorry, I lost my own train of thought. Because I was going to keep going.
No, just
but then
what
I realized,
you guys.
Freddie situation.
Yeah, how did you guys feel about the whole Freddie situation?
I just feel like he lost control in that whole franchise.
I totally disagree with you on that
here's
one.
The
sorry.
Thing. Here's the Go thing. Ahead. Here's the thing with Freddie. Freddie, this is how I look at Freddie. And I don't know if you guys, I felt like Freddie, we look at Tusk and Frank like they're the same people on opposite sides. Mm-hmm. I feel like Freddie and Frank are the same people on two different class levels. I don't feel like Freddie looked at Frank like a superior or anything. He looked at Frank like a good customer. He was a good, loyal customer. He liked talking to him. They understood each other on levels beyond anything that they deal with because they're kind of the same people. I just feel like Freddie and Frank are the same people. And I've always felt like this from the first season, especially when, you know, Freddie would tell his stories, and his stories always kind of be like semi like biblical antidotes, like modern day biblical antidotes that were always like synonymous with some kind of situation. Like in the first season when he was talking about the two guys driving down the freeway and they had this grill on the back and the thing almost hit his truck and he swerved out of the way. It's like there was always some story that he told. He's always treated Frank like Frank was just another dude. And my question for when this whole situation kind of went south for Freddie and Frank went to him to see him, was Freddie one of the very, just like, it was like an epiphany. Oh, wow. Is Freddie like one of the only few people that Frank considers a friend?
That was
the tragedy. Because in such a world that really, you think people that live in the elite are free, they have no freedom. These people, and they did a good job. I think it might be episode 10, next episode, I believe. Not give a spoiler, but I think that they've done a good job at showing how, even though they're the elite and he's the vice president and he has all this status, and they really don't have freedom. They are stuck at their own home. There's not really much they can do. They are slaves to the protocol and rules of their position in such a nature. They can only do so much. Going back to Freddie, Freddie was a slave of his own circumstances. Now, do I feel sorry for Freddie? Yes and no. One side is, no, I don't feel sorry for him, because when he explained to Frank, when he was gangbanging and he's seen guys get shoot execution style, he didn't feel anything about it. He was making $60,000 a month that, you know, and then he went in the joint. His son was born. You know, we could say he was a victim of circumstance, or we can also say that everybody gets to choose how they decide to handle those circumstances that they're dealt, that he didn't have to be a gangbanger. He didn't have to take that route, even though that's the route that he decided to go. But the one thing that makes it tragic is that he tried to redeem himself. And everybody is worthy of redemption, I believe. Everybody's worthy of redemption. And it didn't work out for him. I really want to take that gun out of his son's hand and shoot him myself for being an idiot. Like, shoot him in the kneecap. But, you idiot!
But can I back up there? And yeah. For me, this, and I think the reason I like the backstory is because I didn't have concrete emotions. My emotions were both good and bad, right? So even the scene with his son, when his basically son says, oh, hey, you know, maybe we should get a safe or a service to pick up the money, that made perfect sense. Like, Freddie, what are you thinking? And then Freddie was like, oh, no, I'm fine. Seriously? The entire neighborhood, and I don't care where your neighborhood is, so I don't care if your neighborhood is in, well, probably, where is it? Northeast, Southwest DC. I don't care if your neighborhood is in Southwest DC or if it's in Beverly Hills, California.
Right.
If all of a sudden people know that you come into money and you are walking and you are a not young man, but even if you're a young man and you're walking to the bank or to your home with an excessive amount of cash, you are putting a target on your chest.
Right.
The fact that he didn't even listen to his son, I didn't like that. Then when his son basically brought out the gun and he was like, oh, what about your parole? To me, the son's response was valid. It's like, I'm more afraid of the dudes in my building than my parole officer.
Right.
So in essence, as a parent, tell him what to do. Right. Like, are you going to pay me enough money so that we can move out of this neighborhood? And I'm not advocating violence and I'm not advocating carrying a gun, but in that moment, what is someone supposed to do?
Right.
If you are fearful walking from point A to B, and the reason that I am going to feel a little safer is carrying a gun, and you're telling me not to carry a gun because I might go back to jail, that's really not coming into my reasoning.
Well, see, here's
fear of going to jail
just
doesn't overweigh my fear of dying.
Right.
It's just survival mode for his son. And the fact that Freddie, I think he has been through what he has, and from what I could sense from his character and his posture, he was more of the leader in his group. So he's walking the streets kind of
Freddy.
Yeah. Like, yeah. He's the OG of the streets. Everyone knows him. You know, people will not dare mess with him. Right. But his son is not the same situation. He grew up without a dad. He grew up learning to protect himself. And at the same time, even as, you know, he doesn't want to admit, they live in the projects. So he has to protect himself. Right. So it made complete sense to get a safe for the restaurant and to give his dad a gun to protect himself.
Right.
Because he doesn't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And all the exposure they're getting for the store, you don't know who's going to come and start taxing you or to want money off of what, you know, you're making. So, and his dad lives alone. I don't know.
No, completely. And then,
and we're not advocating.
Yeah, exactly. And then fast forward. And then fast forward when the story breaks and the reporters come.
He doesn't know how to handle that.
No, but also, too, okay, I have never carried a gun in my entire life. I don't know how I would have handled this situation. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was so angry at the reporter. These are not, first of all, I have my own issues with paparazzi.
And he did get in his face.
Right, so I have my own issues with paparazzi. Right. So if you want to talk to me on Twitter about that, I can go on forever. However, again, these are not celebrities. They're not public figures. Yes. They're normal, ordinary people.
Right.
So as a normal, ordinary person, you're literally walking down your own neighborhood, going to work, and all of a sudden someone rushes you with a camera.
That could be a weapon if you're not familiar with seeing a professional big lens camera. Just like something, it could be a weapon,
right? And then the lights are flashing, and if anyone like goes online, mm-hmm. several people who have been in that situation say that it's almost like you're having an epileptic seizure,
right.
because the lights are flashing so quickly, you literally get disoriented because you don't know what's going on, right? Because it's a very abnormal thing, and the lights are flashing. And then basically he was like, yo dude, like, get out of my face. And he's like, oh, I'm not afraid of you, it's called the First Amendment. Wait, now you get an attitude with me?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain level of a lack of respect, because really what's happening is you're not treating someone as a human being, right? The reporter ran on him like, literally, he's like a zoo animal. And then he doesn't have any rights. And to me, yes, was pulling the gun wrong, but there was a certain aspect that the reporter somehow had a right to get into his space. And to me, it is analogous to assault. Like, assault, like, if I take this pen and I throw it at you and I don't hit you, it's still assault. Why? Because my intention was to do you harm or to infringe upon your personal space.
Right.
I'd argue the camera is the same thing. Do I think that goes as far as to say that he had a right to pull the gun? No. But intellectually, theoretically,
it still was triggered by
the manner in which the photographer came. And to me, that was what, was for me, was sad. It was sad that they were now put into a situation that, if not for Tusk, yes, you can say it's a franchise, but if not for Tusk, his son now would not be possibly going back to jail. And that, to me, was unfortunate.
I'm sure Tusk had something to do with it, because out of all the reporters, that one reporter was the one that would not back down. So,
well, here's
who
the thing.
Knows?
And even when he pulled the gun, he's still taking the pictures. So you're not afraid?
Because
he did back up for a second. Because there was more than one photographer there. So you saw the disorientation that you were speaking of, because even though he was one photographer that was actually confronted him, there were a group of photographers. It was about three or four of them that were, like, a couple of them were in the street. One of them was behind the guy. Mm-hmm. So it was like, you can't escape a picture unless you shoot all these guys and take their cameras away. And that wasn't going to happen. So I think he realized that that's why he ran, obviously.
And
it was like,
his
he
dad
was
said
overwhelmed.
Parole.
Yeah. Yeah. His dad said, parole, Darnell. Like, Darnell, parole. And he ran. It was like, dude, like, you know, but he was just, it was an overwhelming scenario for him, and it would, like you said, it would be for anybody. Tusk, actually, talking about, speaking of what you mentioned earlier, Emma, that whole situation, kind of like, it wasn't one of those situations where he was searching or trying to market Freddy's. It just all kind of happened because of the attention Frank was getting. So then Freddy's, it was all about, oh, he got, because they mentioned Freddy's, I believe, in season one in a publication. And they said, oh, he likes to go to this juke joint and have barbecue. He kind of, and it was more of a positive light. It was mentioned. I remember they mentioned it in some publication before.
But Tusk went there himself. So he knows, you know.
No, he knows. That's
no,
what I'm saying.
I think what I'm saying is that he didn't seek out the franchise.
Exactly.
The franchise came to him.
They came to him. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is getting a lot of attention. Whoever the business people were that came to him, the guy who represented the group of investors that wanted to franchise out, they saw an opportunity because the publicity that Freddy's joint was getting. So from his standpoint, it's like, okay, someone's coming out of nowhere and want to offer me money, and what I could do with this money, he wasn't even thinking about himself. He was totally thinking about helping his son and his grandson, who didn't even know him, unfortunately, but he was trying to, like, redeem himself with his family and make up for some past wrongs. That is kind of the crappy thing also about it. My question is, when Frank went to help him, do you think it was foolish of him not to accept the help and keep his business above water?
I think when you say he is...
And that's a question for you guys, too, out there. Because
he is like Frank. Frank would have done the same thing. So Frank wouldn't have accepted an offering.
His guilt money?
His guilt money. Frank would have found a way, even if he had to...
See, now, I agree with you. I agree with you, and I don't agree with you. And let me tell you why both. I agree with you because Frank is like that. Just like the whole Secretary of State thing, how he's like, yeah, even though I got the vice president, I'm still going to crap on the people who didn't help me get the Secretary of State or didn't follow through with their word, even though I'm working with them now and we're all good. We're really not all good. It's just it was that same school of thought with him not taking the guilt money. He felt that's what he felt like. The other side of it is you're not in the same position that Frank is in. This is like live or die survival type situation. So what are you going to do at this point? You're getting a little older. Your son is in jail. You got to bail him out. What are you going to do now in order for you? You've established this business that's been in business for 20 years. It's been in business for 20 years and you've invested in it. It's made a living for you. You know, you've been surviving on this. Frank, to me, a Frank in that scenario would have taken the 60 grand, he would have helped him get the money. He said, look, it'd have been a loan. They could have easily got out of that situation, that scenario. And he could have climbed out of that with Frank's help. Easily. If he would have taken Frank's help. But to me, it was more than obvious that he probably wasn't gonna take it because he's prideful. He has a lot of pride.
But Frank is going in there telling him we can't be friends and you can't tell anyone that you were in my house and you were serving me. But I want to give you a loan.
And I can't come in. And I can't come in anymore. But
how does that make sense? That's like if you can't blur the lines. If we're not going to talk, then we're not going to talk. Then we can't have any connections.
Yeah, but he could have got him the money without it tracing back to Frank. It's only 60 grand. No. These guys deal with millions of dollars.
He can. But to him, that was like, no, if we're going to draw the line and I'm not going to have anything to do with you, then we're going to draw the line for real.
No, that's a really good point that Emma brings up.
That is a good point.
I think it also, because I was a little bit confused with the scene, and now hearing Emma's analysis, it kind of makes sense. It's kind of like, you know, when you're a little kid and even when you're growing up and one of your friends is about to move away and you start almost like picking a fight with them.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what he was doing. In his mind, the minute Frank basically said, like, I can't come to your joint anymore, and he's like, oh well, I'm selling it anyways, then he went into like, I have to disconnect mode. And I'm gonna get the sequence wrong, but even to me, in terms of him saying like the guilt money, I actually didn't take it that way. Like, this was one of the only times where I really felt for Frank.
Like, you know what's funny? I felt the same way.
Completely.
Like, he's losing a friend.
No, completely.
Frank didn't want to go there and say, I can't come here anymore, and he really didn't want to do that. He hated doing that. And he even made a comment where he said, in order to get to the end, he didn't say, this is not verbatim again, but he basically said, in order to get to the end goal, you have to realize and make moves that sometimes you don't want to make, kind of thing. But he said, I will not leave one of my people bleeding out on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And he looked at Freddie like, this is my soldier
comrade.
In arms,
yeah. Sorry, wrong word what's going on these days. Sorry.
Even before,
my soldier, my fellow dude, sorry.
Even before he gets there, when he tells Freddy, oh, you know, now it's kind of like they're picking on you, he's like, well,
he stepped on the wrong rattlesnake. He goes, someone's coming for you, aren't they? And he goes, they done stepped on the wrong rattlesnake.
Freddy knows that, you know, he has to disconnect himself, even if Frank doesn't want to, because that's a way for him to do his part in saving that whole situation.
I think that's an excellent point.
That is a good point, but I don't
because
think
he's completely
way.
Aware
I
of
think
what's...
When he, as soon as he said, I'm not taking your guilt money, that is when he put pride on the table, and that took away any of those other reasons for me of why he didn't take the money. It was all about pride.
But I guess, I agree with you, and I guess, and this is the question.
They've always been on the same plane.
But is pride always a bad thing? Because they've always been on the same thing because neither one took anything from the other.
Exactly. That's what I said. They're always on the same plane.
Right. Okay.
Freddie had a business. He provided a service, and they came and were customers.
It was Frank who then crossed the line. Frank crossed the line by offering. at the end of the day, Freddie had found a solution.
Because it became emotional for Frank. Because Frank was losing a friend.
And so then I think then Freddie reacted emotionally too. But it was Frank who put emotion on the table first. And not necessarily in a bad way.
You're right.
But I think that's kind of why then Freddie kind of had to. And I think then, you know, and I think that's why Freddie had to tell the backstory. He was almost saying to Frank, like, don't feel sorry for me. Because he could feel it.
Yeah.
He could feel that Frank was upset by the entire situation. Like, again, you know, and however long they've been friends or customers.
He came to his house. He came to his house. Loud.
And that's why he even said, he's like, I've never not seen him in a suit. Like, they had a little bonding moment over the blues. Over the, and again, I think your analogy is so spot on in the same point that they're the same. They come even from the same circumstances, if you think about it. Freddie maybe come from the city and Frank from the quote-unquote the country. But right. In terms of an economic beginning, they're very similar, and I think their points of reference are very similar, and I think that's why the blues, and even at, what was the song, Dark of Night, mm-hmm. how symbolic is that? So again, I feel like Frank did what he had to do. I think Frank, as the person Frank is, and as the friend he is, he had to offer, but I think that the man and the friend that Freddie is, Freddie had to say no. And I feel like the closure at the end, when he was like, take care of yourself, I feel like that was, even though the statement before was like, don't worry, you were just a customer, like, you don't need to pretend to be my friend.
Right.
The tone of the last statement disproved that and showed that no matter how minimal it was, there was a connection there and they both cared about one another beyond a customer and a client.
I think you're completely right. And the reason why he said, don't worry, you were just a customer, was a statement that he was going to carry on and tell everyone. He wasn't telling Frank. He was like, oh, no, this is what I'm going to play out and this is what I'm going to tell people.
Right.
But it didn't mean, I didn't take it that he was telling Frank, you were just a customer. It was kind of like rehearsing what he was going to tell people if they ask.
What do you guys think? Yeah. If you were Frank, Freddie, would you have taken Frank's money in order to bail yourself out of the situation and keep your business afloat? I think we're going to get a lot of comments, hopefully, about this particular situation. And
I have one more.
Yeah, go right ahead, Sophia.
I have one more.
Make it quick.
Real quick. Okay. The last scene when he handed over the keys and the way he was walking away, mm-hmm. juxtapose that against the beginning, he literally walked away like a zombie. The only thing, and if you want to talk to me about it, Legal Eagles online, is the morality clause and not giving the signing bonus, that's wrong. Their analysis of it is wrong. He should have taken them to court, even though that would cost more money. But, and the reason being is, the thing that broke morality happened before the contract. They should have done their due diligence. It would have been different if he did something after the signing of the contract. The minute the contract was signed, the money basically, in essence, belonged to him, even though it hadn't been wired yet.
Got you.
Right? So at that moment in time, he technically hadn't done anything wrong, number one. Number two, even if he had, it would have been after the fact. So the franchise, the contract could have now been null and void. But that clause with the signing bonus, mm-hmm. that's mine.
Okay.
You need to be on the writing board.
No. How they wrote it is perfect because the analysis the analysis of it is correct, and it's gonna play out in the next episode as well.
Right.
The difference between the letter of the law and someone's interpretation of the law are not the same thing. So again, my interpretation isn't necessarily correct; it's just my interpretation.
Got you.
Get what I'm saying?
And he's not savvy when it comes to anything legal or anything like that.
But he really was, because he got 5 more points, and that's even why I bring it
that's
up.
That's true.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? And that's why I bring it up. He is savvy. Yeah. But at the end of the day, he kind of was like, yo, I have $40,000 I didn't have before, so forth and so on, I'm good. And it would have cost him more than $40,000 to fight it anyways,
that's
but I
true.
Need to bring it up.
That's true.
Because they were suckers. Really quickly. Don't like them.
Really quickly. Before we nod out for this episode, and we're going to talk about this a little more the next episode, so I just want to briefly touch upon it, is Seth and Stamper's jockeying for position with Frank and how Stamper's feeling threatened, obviously, because Seth has got his eye on the prize and Stamper's got his eye on a different prize. As we can see, that's really not for him. It's not
Frank's
happening.
Frank's quotes are just the best.
Yeah, so what was really funny is every time, you know, Seth is just really concentrating on impressing Frank, doing a really good job. And obviously, Stamper's been around long enough to sense this and see this. And I like it when he says, what does he say? He tells him, let me find the quote, guys. Give me 1 second. He says, upper mobility has a ceiling with the Underwoods, and I'm that ceiling. I loved when he said that. And he said it so matter of fact, like Stamper is the kind of dude who has that face that he will do whatever he has to do. And you're like, you know, the thing I like about Seth is that Seth is so unfazed by Stamper's, his Stamper has this thing about him that's very mafia-esque, that he would do whatever to you, and it's like, oh, okay, let me check myself. And Seth just seems to be like, oh, no, whatever, yeah, I'll shoot you over this, I'll shoot you over that, yeah, whatever. That makes me really want to get more into Seth's backstory. Where's this guy come from, and why is this dude so unaffected by diabolical anythings, and he's actually more attracted to it than anything? I'm going to leave it with that. We'll talk about that more in the next couple of episodes.
And but let us know.
Let us know what you guys think on iTunes. You guys can follow, rate, and comment, and give us 5 stars, guys. The last thing that I want to mention is the symbolism between Frank. Remember, very first episode, Frank. Very first episode, season one, Frank, he killed the dog. Remember Tusk? Remember Tusk?
Uh-huh.
This episode?
The bird.
He was yelling at the bird and kills the bird with his hand. Just go wash his hands real quick and just, like, done with it. He was telling the bird to shut up. Like, the bird is human and the bird's just supposed to be like, oh, okay, Mr. Tusk, and be quiet. And then he just takes it one hand. And that took me right back to Frank with the first episode when he put the dog out of his misery.
Well, let's talk about that more next episode. I could have a lot to say about that.
Anyway, where can we find you guys till next time?
You guys can find me on GQJedi.com and also Twitter, Instagram, RealMKay.
You can find me on Twitter at Sophia Stanley.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Club Thaddeus and GQJedi.com. Until next time, after buzzers.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.